Well, I've been working on just two of them so far. We have 1933 through 1936, and then the one I just worked started on is it's 1950 through 1954.
Okay, so there's a gap in there.
So yeah, I think there's two from the 40s that we still have from the family, and it's just a matter of getting through them all and putting them in the almanac.
So he kept a daily journal.
Daily journal. So, and it's very straight up and simple. You get maybe three lines total, usually with some remark about weather, maybe a temperature, but what he did that day, either pruning or irrigating or making notes about every, how he spent his AM and his PM and maybe who they had over for supper.
Did he ever say what they had for supper?
No, he was just, it's a very simple daily journal.
Why do you think he was doing it for himself? What was his purpose?
Well, I guess I think of it coming from myself is that I like to keep journals about taking care of plants to understand what I did last year and try to remember what it was and when it happened, just to keep kind of yourself on track. He could look back and see last week what he irrigated or when he was started pruning last year or when it was first flowering last year. It's just important to know those things when you're taking care of plants and land and water and all of that.
So before you got hold of William Beasley's journals, you were keeping one yourself.
Yeah, I've always kept journals, but especially about the garden and the greenhouse and stuff like that. So I have a personal love of journals, and when Julia told me that this family had offered up these journals to look at for the almanac, I was all about it. I was like, I would love to help with that and understand what the weather was like and how things were back then
Yeah.
here. Locally here.
So what have you discovered?
I haven't done a lot of year-to-year analysis because I've just been entering information as fast as I can. But what I thought was interesting about 2012, for instance, it was a really odd year for us here. And then I started working on the 1930s, which we knew were like the Dust Bowl era, or some of it. And so when I was reading the journal and kind of comparing it to what we just experienced in 2012, it was just fascinating to know that it was not that unusual, that this has happened before. And it was actually probably worse in 1934 than it was in 2012. And to see how everything fluctuates over time.
So what you're talking about in 2012 was the incredible drying, particularly in March,
Right.
and just the drying up of every bit of moisture that we had, and we didn't have that much.
Yeah, and the lack of snow, getting rain when you expect to get snow in the actual winter months, then surprisingly enough, you'll get rain. The same things happened in 1934. Also, that it warmed up really early, and apricots started to go into flower March 12th. We're in full flower by March 24th in 1934. And so it's fascinating to realize that it's happened before.
Yeah, did it change your idea about global climate change at all? I mean, are you thinking, I don't know.
No, I really think that it's, weather's more drastic today than it has been. But because we have records like this, we can look back and realize that things do fluctuate and it's not like it's never happened before.
How have you changed by reading his journals? Do you note things differently, maybe, or note different things now that you see what he's done.
Yeah, I do, actually. I guess when I enter my journals, I get a little wordy, and I realize that maybe, looking back, it's more important to just have the same, you know, note the temperature, note the weather, what you do, and so when you look back, or when other people look back at what you've written, it's useful, you know, as opposed to, like, just, you know, random notes about things that are happening. I try to note weather, temperature, precipitation, useful things.
Mm-hmm. Did he talk about animals at all, or birds, or any wildlife things?
He talks about shooting skunks. He keeps track of how many he shoots in a year. But not so much. You know, this is, like I said, it's, you get 3 to 5 lines a day.
Right.
And so it's what he has done on the orchard for work, mostly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And supper, of course.
Yeah. And supper, yeah. And who came over?
Oh, and there's, supper. Yeah, and there's also occasionally notes about funerals and, you know, things like that uh-huh. he went to. In the 1950s, I'm noticing more that he traveled up to Junction to go to the old timers dance, and he twice a month would go dancing. So I think that's cool too.
Can you maybe choose one of the passages that might be fun to just give a flavor of what he?
Oh gosh, there's so many good ones. Some of the things that jump out at me when I read. That he has different names for different amounts of storms. For instance, like when it rains, there's words he uses to tell you how much it rained. So on the lower end of the scale, you have a dab of rain. A little bit more is a skift of rain, which I actually had to look up because my spell check didn't recognize it, but it's actually a real word, skift. It's a light rain.
S-K-I-F-T.
And then there's a splat of rain, which is more than that. And then there's a dandy rain, which is a really good rain as a dandy rain. And then there's the rain like hell, which was like, it's really raining. So I love that he uses these words over and over to note how much rain actually fell. It didn't just rain. There's all different kinds of rain.
A skift, a scat.
So I think it starts down at a dab, a skift, a splat, and then there's a dandy rain, and then there's a rain like hell.
Okay.
He doesn't necessarily give a number for temperature, but he will note how thick the ice froze on the water. So if it's 1/4 inch or 1 inch thick, he notes how much ice there is on top of the water in the morning.
Mm-hmm. Do you think maybe he just didn't have a thermometer? Or?
No, he did, because I see notes, but I think it just maybe just tells you more because of how much it actually did freeze as opposed to a temperature it is right now. You know?
Right.
Yeah, that was interesting. He talks a lot about chasing water. Instead of, it's irrigating is what he's doing, but it's, if you've ever gravity irrigated, you know what he's saying. I mean, you're running all over the place trying to get the water in the right corners, and he's chasing water in many, many, many entries. And also pruning. He prunes from the time harvest is done until it starts to flower. He prunes trees all winter long, almost every day. Looking for maybe a larger one. Let's see.
Where he actually exceeded 5 lines.
Right, right. here's just a random one. Maybe we'll read a couple.
Yeah.
This is from November 3rd, 1936. Snowed 2 inches last night and has been below freezing all day. Finished the pig pen and went over to vote. All apples out were froze till they were no good.
And you know what? I have a picture of that day.
Right. That's all you need is just those couple of lines. And when I entered these, I don't enter them all, of course, because it would just take up too much space. But whenever he made a note about weather or something he did for the first time or the last time or a notable change, I entered those things only.
Into the almanac.
Into the almanac, yeah. I like how he says this. He uses, this is February 1st, 1951. 16 below the goose egg this morning. Didn't do anything except try to keep from freezing. 6 above was as warm as it got all day. He starts out a lot with that. Oh, 6 above the goose egg this morning. Oh, and he always notes Groundhog Day, too.
Uh-huh. Why don't you read us some April?
Some April? Oh, okay, yeah.
Just to think about what's been going on here this year and what was going on in 1930-something and 50-something.
Okay, yeah. So April 13th, 1934, he says, harrowed and marked alfalfa most of the day, warm like summer, rained a shower before noon, fixed stitches in the hayfield in the p.m., and it rained again, quite a little shower.
A new category, quite a little shower.
Quite a little shower, yeah. Where does that fit in between splat and skift? on April 18th, he harrowed and planted some potatoes, wormed trees, and planted a little corn. That's really early. Like, this is the year I was talking about that started warming up really early. He planted corn, which is, you have to wait until the ground's warm to really start doing that. And then on April 20th, 1934, he says, set water on alfalfa for the first. So he's already started irrigating. Delicious apples about in full bloom. Apples.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so what date was that?
That was April 20th, 1934.
Okay, so right about now.
Right about.
And we aren't even anywhere near that this year.
No, no. We just had our apricots. Let's see, about another year. Oh, here we go. April 8th, 1935. Peeled posts for the yard fence. It rained quite a shower in the night and most of the forenoon, a dandy rain, enough to wet the ground. That's good rain. And then April 9th, 1935, snowed and rained again last night, almost 2 inches of snow this morning, real muddy.
Okay, well, that sounds like here now.
Yeah, right now, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, April 14th, grafted cherry trees. April 22nd, 1952, pruned till 4 o'clock and got rained out. May 9th, the last snow went off the peak west of the farmer's mine. Yeah, he always notes the last snow on the mountains when it goes away finally, which is usually July.
Uh-huh. Does he talk about Lamborn or Land's End?
Uh-huh, yep. He does. He talks about the snow that he can see. April 9th, 1953. Cold this morning, 27 or 28. Didn't hurt any fruit. Apricots are all right. Fresh skift of snow has laid on Lamborn Mesa for the last 48 hours.
You know, it's very poetic.
Isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it's a little like a haiku or something.
Right. Yeah, simple.
And in those few words, he really gives you a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. April 12th, 1953, Sunday. He always notes when it's Sunday. Was really cold last night. Looked like cherries and peaches were okay. However, this evening, not look so good. Went fishing. Cold, raw, and windy.
Do you think that's because he takes Sunday off?
No, he doesn't take any day off. I mean, I think he maybe tries to, but he always does something every day. You can tell. Yeah, it looks like 1953, a lot of the fruit got froze out. May 2nd, 1953, Looked at fruit buds most of the day. Killed a lot of cherries last night. Also some peaches.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was May when it was still snowing.
1953.
Yeah.
So let's talk a bit about the almanac and your interest in I See Change and the project that you're actually doing. You're not a commercial farmer, but you're a serious farmer for your family, right?
Yeah, yeah. I sometimes refer to it as micro farming. I have a large garden and a greenhouse, and I'm trying to be as sustainable as possible on a small. I have less than an acre, just less than an acre. I'm almost obsessed with gardening and growing food and just watching the cycles of the year. It's just one of my favorite things to do. So the almanac is a perfect companion with that, because not only do I have my own journals that I refer to, but now I look at the almanac and, you can look at everything that's happened this week over the last several years and now back into history and see on any, especially in our changing months like November and December, March and April it could be 80, it could be snowing, it could be anything depending on the week. And I love that about, being able to look back in history and see what actually happened here. And I love that these journals are about this very valley. We heard that weather in Colorado maybe was dry in the 30s, but was it dry here? Every valley has a microclimate. And so now we know about this valley that we live in. And I think that's really important. I'm not exactly sure why, but I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, there's something resonant about it all. It's like striking a chord or hearing overtones in music or something. It gives you it just makes you vibrate somehow.
I know. I agree. Yeah. I'm not exactly sure why it's important. I just know that it really is. And I'm so grateful for the family that allowed us to use these journals and put them in for everyone to see. It's very special. And
so you've undertaken the task of taking William Beasley's journals and not putting in every entry, but putting in enough of them, or some of the key ones, to sort of pin him in time and in different phases of what happens here.
Right. I just when I read each entry, and then I try to just sift out the temperature, climate related things. Like if I were looking at this from somebody who was an orchardist, I would pick out different things. I'm sure they'd be looking at all the references of what he did with his trees. But since I'm looking at the climate, I go through and just try to pick out temperatures, precipitation, and maybe some of the interesting things that he says, just to give it some historical context. It's nice to see,
mm-hmm.
The way he says things. I like that too.
Yeah, I love that goose egg and skift and splat.
Skift and splat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so now do you use those terms now in your own journal entries?
I haven't, no. No, those are his.
Have your own terminology.
I guess I have my own, yeah.
So you, like he, you both have a garden. You have a few fruit trees, is that right?
Yeah.
He had orchards,
yes.
Apparently. But you're dealing with the same plants and projects, essentially.
Yeah, yeah. So when he's doing things, I'm doing those same things now here today.
What's your big takeaway from this whole thing? What do you think you've learned?
I see the value of journaling and of keeping records for not only my own sake, but for anyone else who's interested to share that information for whatever uses they might have for it. You never know when you're going to live through a very odd year. You know, he makes no judgments in here. He just states what's happening every day, not like, this is really strange. It was dry and it shouldn't be dry right now. You know, there's none of that. He's just saying, this is what's going on. So, yeah, you never know what year is going to stand out as odd. And then, you know, maybe it goes back into a normal pattern again. Each year has its own clock, really, of when things change over. And I see that in my own journals and in his, that it's just a cycle and it keeps going, but different things happen at different times every year. I'd like to go through all the journals that we have and kind of really look at them. I've been just more inputting information.
So you haven't really analyzed it yet.
I haven't analyzed it, and but the way the almanac is laying it out, I find that, you know, when I make entries in a week, then I'll look at the column on the left, which is the historical entries, and I can see what's been happening in the past. And so it's just so nice to have all of that information of today, this is what's happening now, and then in the 30s and hopefully soon the 40s and the 50s, you know, this is what was happening, and it's either very different or it's very much the same. Like I mentioned, in 1934, it was the only year that really stuck out in my mind, because he actually notes that they ran out of water, that the ditches ran dry. And there were weeks where he would wait for the water, and then when it would come, he would stay up all night long to try to get as much of it out on his fields as he could, and then it would dry up. And he actually had cherry trees that died that year. And he didn't say from lack of water, but it seemed like it might have been connected. And also all the notes about how much people helped him and how he helped other people. I mean, he constantly had people coming over to help him prune, to help him butcher, and then he would go to their house and help them butcher and them prune and haul hay and haul rock. And, you know, there was just this a lot of floating names of people that they all kind of shifted around to whatever needed to be done on each other's properties. And so he would not only work on his own properties, which he had lots of, and he would go to his neighbor's house and help them haul hay. And then they get together for supper. And you can kind of just see life as it was back then. Very simple, you know. We wake up in the a.m. This is what we do. I went to their house in the p.m. and we butchered the hogs. And we rendered lard. And, you know, it's just this very simple life. And we all had supper.
Yeah, it's different from when I got up and I turned on the radio, or I turned on the television, or I looked at my computer and I checked my email, and then I got to my phone, I checked to see if any text messages were there, and then, you know, we do a lot of that now.
Yeah, and you think about, like, I try to think about how many things I do a day, you know, it's up in the 20s or 30s of different items that you do, and back then, it's 3 lines, you know? It's a beautiful thing.